You're listening to a 9to5.cc podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to Go Plug Yourself. We've been talking to awesome people in Montreal since 2011. Just a friendly reminder that if you're going to be buying anything on Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, or Zazzle.com, go to 9to5.cc first and click the links at the bottom or in the sidebar so that we get a bit of that money. Also follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and enjoy the show.
Go plug yourself. You plug and mother plugger. Go plug yourself.
Podcast of your lives.
Yeah, most boring podcast of our lives. No, we've had terrible guests on before. We're not going to name names. We're not going to name names, but if you know, you know who you are.
In the last year and a half, I have I've gone through this horrible sort of like quarter life crisis or whatever, where I've lost all self confidence.
Okay.
I think of myself as being like grossly disinteresting. I hate talking about myself. I hate hearing people talk about myself.
Super glad you came on as a guest.
I know, and on the so the
really
way over
excited.
Here when
when you realized you were doing a podcast.
I know when I got into when you guys got in touch the first time I was like, "Oh, this would be really fun. I listen to podcasts constantly. I sort of stopped listening to radio and I listen to podcasts constantly. I've listened to 3 already today."
You're our market.
And then and then on the way down here though, I started to seize up. I was just like, "Holy shit, like I can't think of anything like more terrifying to do than sit with 2 strangers and actually try to sound interesting. Like this is going to be
we've made a thing of it. Basically,
listeners, that ball of positive creativity talking right now is our special, very special guest today that I'm not allowed to say a single nice thing about.
I'm not allowed to say his name, and I was like, it's going to be tricky for the rest of the podcast.
Can I just say actor? Is that okay? He's an actor, but I'm not allowed to say extraordinaire. But he's extraordinaire. Thespian extraordinaire.
You're upsetting him.
Yeah, I'm sorry. He's
visibly upset by
this. This is getting cocked right now. We have Graham Cuthbertson on today.
That's right.
Thanks in large part to a connect made by the man who supplies the music for the show.
Theme song.
Yeah,
Leland does our
Leland
theme song.
Leland Beckman,
aka
Old Herpetude.
Do you know how has Leland been a guest on the show before?
Yes.
Let me tell you something funny.
Yeah.
I was going to do the creepiest thing to you, and it was going to be amazing. It would have been a terrible joke for like an audio medium, but I saw your childhood home a couple weeks ago. I was in front of it, and I thought it would be the creepiest damn thing
on 234 Sydenham Street.
If I took a picture of it and be like, "So Graham, I see your parents are keeping the place up."
That would be really interesting.
We went to Toronto with Leland, and we made a stop in Kingston, so Leland could show us all the sweet Kingston spots. And he's like, "This is Graham's home."
You do a really good Leland, actually. <That's>
And so, like, oh,
it would
shit.
Have been even crazier if you could like somehow like, make a connect with his parents and like have a picture of you sleeping in his bed. And you're like, "Hey, what do you think of this photo?"
But
I told
Leland, I was like, "Leland, give me his number. I'm gonna like text him a picture of his house right now."
Man,
like, I'm doing a lot of research for the podcast, Graham.
So across the street, you'd have seen that's the grade school that Leland and I met at, and we were sort of friends. He was a year younger than me in grade school, and for one birthday, I was invited over to his house. I'm going to say like we were in grade 4, so maybe like Leland's 10th birthday or something like that. And we were friends, we knew each other, but this was certainly the first time that I'd ever been to his house. And Leland either had a Nintendo, or I think, because, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, we come from working class families. In this part of town, certainly, we weren't as bad off as others in the city, for sure. But we were all stretching. Our parents were always stretching their pay, and I think that his old man had rented a Nintendo, and I was certainly never allowed to have a Nintendo. Anybody who had a Nintendo, I tried really hard to buddy up with and be
yeah.
the best friend.
Oh yeah, yeah, you got it.
That was like the usual.
Yeah, I guess so. If you either had one or didn't, and if you didn't. The kids would be over. So Leland had this, and he had rented Tecmo Bowl, and he'd rented something else. And at one point, we've been playing it all day, but I hadn't gotten my fill of it yet. So they all went in to watch, like, Back to the Future 3 or something like that. Uh-huh. And I was just like, fuck you guys, I'm going to keep playing Nintendo.
You're barely friends with Leland.
No, yeah, like, this is the first time ever.
I know it's your birthday, but I'm going to stay here and play Nintendo.
And I fucking played so hard, and I was so into it that I swear to God, I pissed my pants. Instead of getting up from the... And I'm 10 years old, like, or 11 maybe, I'm a year older than him. I just chanced it. I just thought, I'm gonna hold on as long as I possibly can, because I don't want to give this up for a second. And I pissed my pants, and I ran to the bathroom, and I pissed all over myself and everything. So I come out of the bathroom. I don't even remember being that embarrassed. That's what's so fucking weird about it.
You come out of it, what happened, Graham? You're like, fucking pissed my pants.
Give me back the controller. Yeah. So Leland's old man gave me a pair of Leland's pants. And being kids, they were mine now. They were my pants. Leland's dad gave me a pair of Leland's pants. And Leland sort of held it against me forever. They were like his favorite pants. And it never crossed my mind to give them back to him once I went home and washed them and, you know, and brought them back to school. And my parents were idiots, so they never bothered to give them back. Like, the whole thing was so stupid.
Your parents are sort of like, sweet.
Yeah, they're just like, free pants. We need them. Uh-huh. And Leland kind of held it against me forever and ever, and I think we reconnected later on in high school, and he told me that. I thought that was
pretty funny. I'm trying to remember some of it, because, like, if Graham was a feature of any of Leland's super... Remember his super crazy elementary school stories?
I don't know that it would have been a feature, but I would probably know a lot of them. We went to school together for six years, from those formatable years of grade one to... grade two to six.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Weren't some of them just sad?
Well, some of them were sad, but I remember specifically, this is a flat... Listeners, go back and go to whatever episode we recorded with Leland, where he was talking about there was, like, one kid who, like, just lied profusely about the sexual acts that he had done, and he was, like, 10 years old and was
that's
just
amazing.
Sort of... And was just going to, like, yeah, I had an orgy, and, like,
that's
whatever.
Awesome.
So it was, like, someone who had, like, read Penthouse letters and then was, like, I did those things.
That's amazing. I don't remember that specifically, but we had a bunch of... We had kids... Yeah, we had kids for sure that would pull that off, and we would all buy it, too.
It was just the fucking greatest story, because you just imagine, like, just, like 10-year-old being, like, you know, like, yeah, I had three chicks at once.
Fucking bitches.
You know,
right,
and just sort of, like,
that's awesome.
Fucked bitches nonstop. So
before we get into any more Leland Graham stories, and I really want to do that, like, I think we should need to devote, like, it'll be like a sub-podcast, Leland Graham stories.
At minute 10, we commence Leland and Graham growing up in Kingston.
But what are you up to, like, right now? Are you still is Trad done? Trad's not done, is it?
Trad closes on Sunday next, the 24th.
So you got a show? You're doing that tonight?
No, tonight is our dark night. So,
okay.
So we go 8 shows a week, Tuesday to Sunday. We do 2 on Wednesday and 2 on Saturday.
Okay. Trad is the production currently on at the Centaur.
Yeah.
Okay.
That Graham.
I'm sure by the time anyone hears this, it'll be
dead,
buried.
Yeah.
But
so that's what Graham was doing.
That's what you missed.
That's what you missed. Yeah.
And how's that? How's that been going?
I like the show very much, and of course I'm working with people that I've worked with for a long time, and so we're all very close and we like working together. But it's really tough for me working at subscription houses like the Centaur or the Siegel Center. I have a really hard time with the work that I end up usually doing in those places. I feel like the audience is not always interested in seeing work that is less than straight ahead and obvious, and it's a little bit frustrating from time to time. I think
you're saying subscription because, like, people can buy, like, you buy, like, the season pass to the theater.
Yeah,
the way that
this
and you're just, and I suppose if you're, like, in a position to buy a season pass for a theater, you kind of, like,
well, you buy the pass just regardless of what they're
showing.
But you buy the
subsequently,
five
though, I think, I don't know, you would know this better than I would, but I'm like, in that scenario, I could imagine what you're saying. Of, like, people are like, well, I paid a season pass and I'm expecting a certain quality. And you're like, that might not even be a good quality.
I think quality's... quality might not be the word. It's,
I'm not
it's content.
Saying, I'm not saying story.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a rough quality, or this is, like... I'm not saying quality as, like, good, but they're, like, they're looking for certain elements. Like a PBS kind of...
Like, splashy, the splashy
I feel like they're looking for
like
PBS.
Linear
yeah, they
plays,
want things
like,
that are very linear narratives.
Yeah.
They want things that are modern. They want things that... They want really bizarre things, too, where they love large casts. They love seeing lots of people on
yeah.
the stage.
Well, it's like,
and
you
then,
don't...
And then, they, and then when they get asked about, like, how the show was, that's the first thing they say.
Yeah,
like,
it
had
a lot of people. Yeah, it had a lot of people.
Like, that's
huge, massive, impressive cast.
And then the last show I did there a year ago was probably the biggest cast they'd had on that stage in years, and of course they hated it. Haunted Hillbilly. It was a huge
I loved
disaster.
Catherine and I
you have a poster for that.
Really enjoyed that. We had that the poster that
you're the one, and I appreciate it.
We really enjoyed that
very much.
By the way, my girlfriend is ready to run away with you in a heartbeat.
Oh, really?
So,
okay,
so
well,
you can say hi to her.
Just
throw out a hi,
no,
Catherine.
Don't.
Yeah,
don't do that.
This is super pro.
No shout-outs?
Yeah, no shout-outs after the
shout-out
incident of 2011. It was an hour of shout-outs. I'd like to say hi to Ricky.
I know this is really dumb, but I told you before I listen to podcasts, and there's a running gag in a podcast. I'm trying to make this as short as I possibly can. There's a running gag in a podcast I listen to where the guy does shout-outs on Friday. That's fucking hilarious. That's all I'll say.
Just
but
as
that's
long
really
shout-outs. That was always my least favorite
reading
part.
Twitter handles, and when you get someone to read a long list of Twitter handles, you realize how stupid, especially when people are amalgamating different words together to try to find the thing that encompasses them.
I just love when they, if you read a tweet that's, full of, retweeting, so you have retweet, at so-and-so, and whatever, and then, the string of hashtags afterwards, and it makes sense to you visually. You can tell what he's doing, and, hashtags are kind of, mostly jokes at this time, or trying to, reference into a discussion, but when you read it out loud, it's insanity.
I've started including hashtags into my text messages. I find them, email. I think they're really, it's a greater invention. The hashtag's a greater invention than Twitter. It's the best shorthand. Because those are two, if you're, emailing or texting somebody, oftentimes it's hard to completely... To nail the tone of the message.
Yeah.
Some people, if you're reading it, you can't tell if they're being cynical or ironic or if they're asking you in earnest or something. And with a hashtag, you can really sort of really get to the bottom of exactly what you want from that.
I always wanted to just have a 2013 tweet of Dr. Strangelug hashtag how I learned to what's the full title of Dr. Strangelug?
Stop Worrying and...
Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Yeah. That was a hashtag?
Yeah. I think that's more than the amount of characters you could put into
it. No, you'd be fine. You'd be fine.
That could become quite relevant quite soon.
So,
exactly.
So both the Trad and you mentioned Haunted Hillbilly last year. Those are both, correct me if I'm wrong here, remounts of Sidemart.
Centaur... So I have had a theater company with some friends for we are friends, but we're associates now. We've been working together for 6 years, and I certainly work with them more often than I would work with other companies. And recently we've had some success with people wanting to remount our shows.
Right.
So the Centaur has purchased 2 Haunted Hillbilly, and then this year Trad. I really fucked up the mute button there. Sorry, guys. And then...
you weren't muted at all.
Oh, did I okay. And then
I was I'm just watching you. Like, fine.
Graham's on a lot of cold medication.
I am. I'm really sick. I'm drinking, and I shouldn't be drinking, but it's way too much fun. Yes, and we do another show called Dick Powell and the Mood for Jazz, which has been. We did a stint at Zoo Fest last year, and we did a little bit at the Jazz Fest for 2 nights, and then. So people, we produce the work on our own, and then we've gotten a little bit lucky over the years that some people are now want to buy our work, which is about the only way you can make money in the theater is if somebody buys it afterwards.
Right.
And Trad might get bought again, so we're a little bit lucky in that.
I'm sorry, what was that one more
Trad
time?
Trad might get bought again.
Great.
And brought to, there's some talk about bringing it out to Alberta and bring it to Ottawa and Toronto, so we'll see what happens.
And in the 2011-2012 season, you guys also did Scientific Americans.
That's right.
At Siegel Center, right?
But that was, the difference with that was the Siegel, we'd never done Scientific Americans before, but the Siegel Center was we really want you guys to produce some work for us.
And it was indeed a Sidemart.
It was a Sidemart production.
Okay.
But we'd never, it was a co-production with the Siegel Center. So the Siegel Center came to us and said, would you guys be interested in producing this? And we said, sure.
You frequently play similar characters. I don't know if I noticed it was sort of carried over. Well, maybe just 2 plays actually between Scientific Americans and Haunted Hillbilly. There's a kind of a similarity to your character. You're kind of like this omniscient narrator character.
Yeah, I think
that's also involved in the action of the play.
That was coincidence, right? Because Scientific Americans, we just needed to find a place for me, and I wanted to be a part of it. So that
and put my ass on stage.
Well, I think I have a knack. Certainly, I am. You know, some actors are method actors and they love to inhabit a character and that's all that really is important to them, and other actors are sort of more comedians and they really get off on jeune and making people laugh and sort of expressing themselves physically and stuff. And I have just always had this ability to stand in front of a group of people and communicate directly, looking them in the eyes. A lot of actors hate that. A lot of actors hate direct address. A lot of actors sort of get scared by that. But it's something that, for whatever reason, has come naturally to me. I don't know why, because I sort of hate people and I hate large crowds.
Well, it almost approaches stand-up at that point.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, a little bit. I mean, you're certainly working with text.
Yeah.
But there is a give and take in a way. You know, normally on stage, I think the way I look at acting, you acting is a relationship between you and your other acting partners. It's communication of text, but also between you and the other actors that are there with you on stage. And I think you could take that a step further, and that communication extends to your relationship with the audience. Some actors, it doesn't thrill them as much to be aware of the audience, but
right.
Certainly something that we've learned through Sidemart is that the audience is always going to be there, and it's really important for us to let the audience know that we're aware that they're there.
Cool.
And give them a chance to be a part of the experience. So most of our shows, including Trad right now, if you read Trad, you know, Trad very much is a show that sort of takes place is an old theater term, with a fourth wall, meaning that, you know, the audience is watching you, but if you could imagine there's this invisible wall between you and the audience, there's a fourth wall. If you live, you know, in a room, there's four walls in a room.
He reads comic books, I watch wrestling. We're both very familiar with the fourth wall.
Wrestling, yeah, certainly. Right. Wrestling and comic books, yeah. Yeah. Grant Morrison, Animal Man, right?
Yeah,
There we go.
I was like, where did I have a crazy long conversation about Grant Morrison, Animal Man? And it was on the other podcast.
Oh, for real? Sorry, I talked about that? But I love that stuff, and that's certainly shit that has influenced us. And wrestling, I hate to bring it up, but it's totally influenced me in many ways. Not necessarily in the ways that I think...
Walter's
typical.
So excited. Look,
typical.
He's giddy. He's
would be
giddy
typical
right now.
Of somebody, but I have a very different relationship with wrestling than you might think that I mean by this. But anyway,
well, we're gonna have to get back
what the
to
fuck
it
I'm
though.
I'm talking about. Say in Trad, we found a way. This is stupid. I'm a totally shitty rant, but we found a way in Trad because it's part of our style. It's part of what we really like to do. We found a way in Trad to take out that fourth wall. It's like really important thing for us. If you come see a stage play that we've put on. Not that we're going to, you know, come and yell at you and grab you and make you part of the show.
Oh, but it's an idea.
It is an idea. It certainly puts a fear in the room and energy in the room that people...
Just call we're going to yell and grab you. Yell and grab people.
Again,
opening the 2015-16 Centaur season.
What was the
Teller
movie?
We're not looking to be successful.
Oh, shit. That was funny. The you know Teller from Penn & Teller?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
He put on there's a movie he did. It was like a documentary. No, it wasn't a documentary. It was like they shot this magician's live stage show.
Okay.
And so the film is just like about an hour long, and it's this guy's stage show, and the whole thing.
Which
is
like a bit of a not necessarily a magician. It's like a creep show.
Yeah, he's like sort of like the vaudeville guys like that they talk
a
about
scary magician.
They channel spirits and stuff, and there's a bit of a freak show element to it too. And they do that, and they shut out the lights, and they do a lot of audience weird, creepy audience interaction stuff. It's really cool.
But like during the film they shut out what. If you were there, they would shut off the lights and have people in these black suits like come and like touch you, or like there was like air blasts in your face, so you suddenly get like a giant gust of wind from a spectral presence and stuff. So, but when they filmed the movie though, they had the infrared cameras, so you could see
the way people were being interacted with.
The way that the audience was actually being interacted with, which was like just made you, of course, really want to have been there.
Yeah.
You know, and not to see the people in black, but just to have these weird, like...
That's why I never go to that that au noir restaurant.
Yeah.
That is entirely... I just can't, for the life of me, I'm just going to be so terrified that everybody around me has taken their clothes off and are jerking each other off.
Every time I bring that
place
up...
People are spitting in my food and I can't see or hear.
My girlfriend is so quick to mention that she grew up there every time I bring it up. It just comes up, they're all come up in passing.
Someone just like snuck around and just like...
Yeah, I wasn't groped there, but what I will... What I will say is that I instantaneously abandoned cutlery.
That's hilarious.
I was just like, fork, knife, I don't know what's on my plate.
Yeah,
and
so
at
I'm
a certain point in the night, I'm just rubbing my hands on my plate, like, finding, like, oh, I found some food. And then I was like, putting it in my mouth.
That's an awful gimmick. I don't care if they are
bad. Yeah, I'm okay to miss out on that.
And you're just like, I was like, I knew there was asparagus in this order. I just cannot find it. Maybe I knocked it off my plate. And, oh, there it is. And just shove it in my mouth. It just, who gives a fuck? They do, the tables are about... Maybe at least where the table we're at right now is pretty big. They're big tables, so you have to like really reach to even get near someone else's plate.
Okay.
And they're very pointy.
And pointy?
Yes.
What are pointy?
The tables.
I don't know.
They're not. I'm making that up.
Like, everything is covered in razor blades.
Yeah. everything is hot and pointy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Things are pretty spread out because, like, I was like trying to like figure out how far away the table is, and I was like, oh, they did put some thought into at least moving people.
So you're not inadvertently.
You're not continually elbowing people and smashing into them, but. Yeah, it's a weird place, and the food is not that great.
Well,
you're just
then,
sort of like, I'm, and you're like, the craziest part is you're like, oh, you're paying for the experience. I was like, no, actually, they're saving on electricity. I was like, there's no reason this should be expensive. Like,
but if you think about it, they're probably paying more for electricity.
How?
So we've spoken about some very serious
theater
things.
Justify that explanation. I want to really know what you mean. What the fuck are you talking about?
But
let's
also
bring it back to wrestling.
I don't want to shoehorn it into wrestling. But I also wanted to touch on the voice work that you've done. Some of the video game stuff.
Yeah.
Your supporting character is in Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, I played Subject 16. I guess his name is. Although not the original Subject 16. He was played by apparently a really famous video game voice actor, and when they switched him for me, people were really annoyed by that.
Did you
get a flame war on the internet?
Every once in a while,
hashtag
I would go
real
check
Subject
it out
16
because I didn't play the game, so I didn't know how they turned out. And
are you a gamer at all? Do you play much?
I do, but I joke about this with my friend Kyle all the time, who's a big gamer. I'm really fucking bad at it. I end up getting stuck in shit that, like,
and then he just pisses himself.
Yeah, exactly. Do you ever play Skyrim?
I have not played Skyrim.
So Skyrim's a game that, like, you can conceivably
play forever.
It's a long game, but in terms of the main quests and the whole thing, if you're halfway competent, I believe you approach the end of the game within 100 hours, give or take, more or less.
I think so. Yeah.
I've been playing because it keeps a little tally at it. I've put in 125 hours in this thing. I'm still I'm barely halfway through my leveling up.
Right.
I'm like 0% completed in my main quest.
Jesus.
Like there's like the way I play the game, there's another 50, 60 hours of gameplay left. So I threw it under the couch. I'll never go near it.
No, but there's those games. There's Skyrim. There's
destroyed
also
me.
There's also Fallout and stuff where you're just like.
That's why I played those games.
Yeah,
I
there's like the main
shit.
Quest, and then you get to this village, and you're like, this village needs some help. And then that's like 20 hours of the game that has nothing to do with your main quest.
Yeah, and I
hate
spent
too games.
Much time doing that. So.
I really dislike those games. I like games that are, like, start to finish, that everything that I'm doing is related to the story. I don't know if that's, like... some people really,
I like
really
the RPG stuff, but I didn't get into, like, Assassin's Creed and stuff, the games that I... Oh, I did play Splinter Cell Conviction. That was the first game that I was ever in, and so I was interested in playing that, and that was short, first of all, and it was kind of fun. I like that stealth aspect of it. I dug that.
We had on Michael Mando.
Yeah, Mike Mando. Sure, he's a big deal right now.
Yeah, we had he did the Far Cry 3 thing.
He's a big deal.
He doesn't give a shit about video games.
Have you seen?
Does he not?
He's like, I don't play
them.
Yeah,
he has. Yeah,
I'm terrible at them. Like,
but he's certainly become a star in that. I would imagine it's going to be very lucrative for him in the next.
Oh yeah, he's
years.
Very like he's super super gracious to the fans and everything. Yeah. But he's like I just don't.
What I'm
don't
wondering is, do you know him as an actor? Do you guys like know each other
I just worked with him actually at Ubisoft, and I don't
for
think
another
I
game.
I don't think I can talk about what game I met him on because it's not out yet. I'm sorry.
I think
about
he's
that.
That's the game that he was talking about that he couldn't talk about.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Because remember, he mentioned he's like, I have a couple more stuff coming up in video games, but I cannot talk about.
One of the shitty things about doing that stuff is you never know when. You never know. We met working on a project. Oh no, it has been released. No, it's okay. I realize because it has been I met him working on the new Rainbow Six game.
Okay.
So, but the game hasn't been released yet. But they've released that the game exists. So that
I think that's fair.
Yeah. So I don't think
we could take this out later anyway.
Yeah,
no,
I'm
just talking about it for another 20 minutes. Just
we did the first we worked on the first playable demo of it. I think.
Now tell us about the codes and the secret levels of the game.
Do you think he could fight Michael though?
Because
he's not a really big guy, and
Michael,
you seem taller than him.
I'll tell you this, Michael. He is a method actor. I don't know where these people come from. I don't know how they decided that this is the way that acting works. It's the complete opposite of how I approach things. And when we were working, it really works in a sense of a film sense, I think. And certainly if you're doing classical American theater, I understand how there was I understand the allure of like making your life your art, and so encompassing the idea of a character, and that will somehow translate to an audience, to either a camera or to an audience when you're doing these great American classics, these Tennessee Williams and one. I understand that because those are lives, and you're playing a life. The narrative, like we talked about before, is you know, this is 3 or 4 hours almost of continuous sort of experience. So it's good to have this base, this like method base of knowing everything about them in every detail. But when you go into a fucking video game, like they just show up. They're just like, you don't get your sides beforehand or anything like that. You don't know anything about it. You just show up and you're literally playing 6 characters a day. You're like, here you're you know, here you're a thug. Here you're off. You're taking these crates off this boat, and then the bad guy or the good guys find you. And
what's my motivation for taking these crates off this boat?
You do it, and they're like gruffer.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, all right.
you don't even get that detailed. Actually, that's why I think it's hilarious. But before each take, Mike Mando's just like slapping himself in the face and like, ooh, you know, making these like clenching his hands and fists and rubbing his arms. You know, he's just like flexing and getting really worked up. It's awesome.
I need to move these crates to feed my family.
And maybe that does translate because Mike Mando is certainly a lot more successful in that world than I am.
He's like the Daniel
Day
Lewis of video voice.
I was laughing my bag off.
Is it there's like a famous quote, I can't remember. It's like, I think it's Dustin Hoffman who was like
Laurence Olivier on the Marathon Man.
Yeah, exactly. Laurence Olivier in a marathon. If you know the story, you could probably do it better.
No, it's just they were in the shoot in that final sequence, I guess. It takes place in the underground somewhere and Dustin Hoffman's having a really horrible time sort of like finding, like you said, Walter, sort of his inner motivation of like what he's feeling in this scene, what he's doing, and it was just driving Laurence Olivier sort of bad or mad because they were just hanging around for hours.
What were you talking about, Marathon Man?
Marathon Man. And eventually Olivier just turned to him and said, "What's your problem, kid? It's called acting."
Yeah, exactly. he was like Hoffman was like doing push-ups and like running around to like try to like break a sweat so he'd be like legitimately exhausted.
Just act.
Exactly. And Laurence Olivier is like, "It's called acting."
Yeah.
It's fine. You're just like, fuck.
The guy that I work with the most, I suppose he's my best friend too, this actor in town, Patrick Costello, and he's in Trad. We hadn't worked together for a really long time, and the handful of times that we had worked together recently, they were in such ways that we didn't really approach it in this way. But working on Trad, we both sort of realized a few weeks, because, you know, we were driving each other nuts. I was just so frustrated with how, in my mind, and this is unfair to him, because this is what the point of the story is, I suppose. In my mind, I was conceiving him coming along really slowly, and it was driving me nuts, and I just wanted to, like, just pound through shit. And we sort of realized halfway through at the process that it's really important for him to feel in a method way, sort of, it's a joke, but to feel every sort of aspect of what's going on in the character. And it just, we all end up in the same place. We just get to it very differently. And for me, I'm very flippant. Like, I can sort of go in and out of scenarios really easily, and it's really important for me not to intellectualize what I'm doing. I don't want to think about it. I want to go in there and experience it. It'll either work or not work, and if it doesn't work, I can figure out why it didn't work and so on and so forth. But he's ultimately terrific in the show, and I think I lost a lot of steam worrying about him all the time or getting really uptight about his process, and it fucked me up along the way. Anyway, it's funny. So Mike Mando, he's a big dude in the video game business. Yeah.
And is that work? Do you enjoy doing that work? Or?
I shouldn't be super honest about this, although, you know, hopefully nobody hears this. But I find it frustrating. Like it's the people who you work with are always fun. And I know that sounds like a cliche, but I do enjoy going
it's
there.
It's a good team.
I do enjoy. Yeah, yeah, they're good. They're good folks, and I really get along working with them and stuff. But I'm certainly
His head no.
I'm thinking about the work. And I'm at this point in my career right now where when I think about why I do this for a living and what I wanted to be when I decided I wanted to be an actor, and I joke about this with my friends, but like, I don't think anyone watches like a really funny Colgate commercial and it's like, shit, I want to be an actor. Like, that looks like fun. Or that somebody plays a video game and goes, oh man, I want to, because ultimately I think, like wrestling, video games are only about that good. You sort of watch it and play them the whole time, and in your brain, you're sort of the whole time you're kind of going like, "Man, I can't believe this is as good as it gets." Like, it's got to get better than this. This was my experience with wrestling forever. I was just like, "I can't believe it." Always feels like wrestling. It always felt for me actually that wrestling the thing that it didn't own up to was that wrestling was super successful and popular because it consistently made the wrong choices and put over the wrong guys and continually, like, took advantage of the fans' generous nature of, like, their like, the suspension of disbelief and their willingness to love this no matter what.
Yeah, it's not a credit to the writing at all.
No, not at all. They just, like, it's like, I think we, it's like, it's like battered wife syndrome to a certain extent. Like you, that's my relationship with wrestling. It's certainly my relationship with video games, especially after, like, I enjoy playing it for a while, and then all of a sudden there's that horrible moment, like, where I wake up hungover, but it's from video games, and I'm just like, Christ, like, what the fuck have I been doing with my life? But
part is
I understand why you do it.
You talk about that about wrestling, but it's like there's pro wrestlers who, like, talk the same way. Like, I listen to
I would love to meet them.
CM Punk. I listened to a podcast with CM Punk, and he was, like, literally, like, he's like, the WWE has absolutely, like, no, like, there's no point for them to be good. They're like, they don't have to be. They're like, they can, like, dole out the exact same story they did 5 years ago, and everyone's like, yay, and they still sell out arenas, and they still, he's like, wrestling has an opportunity to be interesting, and it just never takes it.
Do you remember that moment a year ago when he was like, when Punk did that faux shoot promo or whatever?
Yeah,
I don't watch it anymore, but I pay attention to it, I guess. And and everybody sort of thought, oh, fuck, like, you know, maybe we're going to get real. Shit's going to get real again.
Yeah.
And of course it didn't. And he gets involved in these stupid feuds where they're just fake wrestling talk. Same with Daniel Bryan. Like, when I was into wrestling, I loved the shit out of Daniel Bryan. When he was the American Dragon at ROH, like, oh, fuck.
Getting deep.
I knew this was going to happen.
This is, to be fair, the show degenerates into wrestling.
Can
talk
I talk?
Like 80%
and it's happened kind of organically today, which I'm really happy.
This
about.
Is a problem for me because I spent my entire like my 20s as being like a solitary wrestling fan. I had a few friends that were interested in the Attitude Era with me and stuff, but my appreciation for wrestling went in a different direction. And there was a moment at about right before the right before The Wrestler came out as a movie, I went to a couple of ROH events by myself. ROH is Ring of Honor.
Our listeners know.
I went to a couple of Ring of Honor events and actually met some of the folks that were there doing research for The Wrestler. I met, like, the production designer and stuff like that. They were there. And the reason we met, I'd gone to a 2 days event. Every year in New York in December they do the year-end show. They do it two nights back-to-back.
Okay.
It's called some big ROH show. It's the end-of-the-year show.
Okay.
So I went down to those, and I went by myself, and I thought, you know, this is going to be the time. I've spent all this time being, like, a lone wrestling fan. I don't have anyone to talk about this shit with. I'm going to go down. I'm going to be part of the action. I'm going to go meet people. I got tickets to go to these parties afterwards. I was so excited. I never felt more alone in my whole life. Like, I don't know what it was about me, but, like, I remember buying, like, these front row tickets, and I'm sitting there up against a guardrail, and I'm looking around all the other fans, and I'm like, we're all here together, and they would just look at me like I was some sort of, like they thought I was like a narc or some sort of like anti-wrestling like crusader or something. Like I was in a wolf in sheep's clothing or something. They didn't trust me.
Why do you feel that though? Why do you think
I don't
that?
Know without getting super like judgy. I don't, you know, I didn't really know. I didn't judge them. We certainly had different backgrounds.
Maybe you weren't American enough.
Different things. Maybe. For sure. But on the second day, I decided I wasn't going to sit up front anymore. So I literally sat in the back at the Hammersmith Ballroom or whatever. I went to the balcony and sat in the back row. And I was there a few other people who sort of looked a little bit like outsiders. There's this like line of four women who clearly could give a fuck to be having been there, and there were a few dudes who were kind of like watching it, but watching the fans as much as anything. And eventually, one of the dudes comes over to me. And he's just like, "Can I ask you a question?" I was like, "Yeah, sure." He's like, "Who are you, and why are you here?" And I was like, "I came here to watch wrestling, and you know, I guess I come up from Montreal." And he just started talking to me. And the reason he came over and asked me that is because he sort of felt like he was there. He was working as a production designer for The Wrestler. And at that point, well, you remember they use an ROH event at the end of the film.
Yeah, was that an ROH
event? And like a few guys show up in it and whatnot. But he just still felt like an outsider. But the thing that I thought was the most amazing, and this was so weird to me, is that he was a university educated guy working in films. Like he's an arts guy. So like, you know, he had a very different lifestyle and whatnot, but it was like 2010, Yeah. You know, he's there, and the night before he'd gone backstage, and there was like a match between Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli. And if you ever read the, if you ever read the blogs or whatever, you know that those two guys are best friends. But at the time, they were feuding.
Yeah.
And he literally pulls out his camera and starts showing me digital pictures, and he's just like, "Dude, check this out. This is backstage after the fight. They're like best friends, man."
He marked out.
Yeah, he totally marked out. And I was just like, "You're like a 33-year-old, like educated, like super smart. You look down on this shit, first of all. Like you look down on it, and yet you still have that weird social like
you somehow bought the animosity.
Thing. Yeah, where you think that like, well, it's not real. It's totally fake." But at the same time, look, these guys really like each other. Yeah. Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, and that's, I guess, why I always liked wrestling. There was, like, this amazing, even people who didn't believe it, believed it.
Yeah.
Ultimately,
that's,
which I thought was so fucking weird, and it never...
That's the, there's the where Punk was talking about the... How he was, like, he gets a lot of flack for what he says on the mic, but he's, like, it's people who are, like, they're, like, oh, they... He's, like, they understand the fighting is fake. But for some reason, they don't understand that the talking is also
That's
fake.
That's hilarious to me.
You know, and she's sort of like, why would you say those things about Jerry Lawler? He just had a heart attack. He's like, you think I didn't ask Jerry? Like,
if I could say
if
those,
I could say those things? He's like, no, why would that part be real? You know, like, the fighting is all made up, but when we're talking on the mic, it's...
That's real.
That's what we're really about. She's like, it's just fucking bonkers. And the weird... The fact that there's people that still, like, mark out is... Amazing
yeah, it's amazing.
Me.
It is amazing to me, too.
Keith, I feel like I'm being a question hog over here. Do you have some questions for Graham?
Assassin's Creed. No, just I don't
know. You want to talk about Assassin's Creed? I once saw a kid reduced to tears. My little brother went to a fencing camp, and I showed up at this fencing camp with, like, these, like, 13-year-old kids.
Okay.
And when I showed up to pick my brother up after fencing camp, this little kid came up and was just like, "Can I have your autograph?" And I thought... My brother had lied to him. I thought my brother had told him I was some sort of like famous actor and told him I was in all this shit. And I was sort of trying to be nice to the kid. But I was
mean
just
to
like,
a child.
I was just like, you know, I don't really want to give him. There's no reason to give it to you. Like, I'm not a thing. I'm not a thing. And he's like, you were in Assassin's Creed. And I was like, yeah. He's like, you played Subject 16, and I really it's my favorite game. And I was just like, oh my god, this is really happening.
He has Subject 16 posters at home and
stuff. Yeah, and so I just like signed him, and then he like ran away, like holding the autograph up in the air, like screaming, like skipping, like it was ridiculous.
That happens though. Kids,
people love it. It was yeah.
I've honestly never really gotten into the Assassin's Creed games. Like,
yeah, they're huge, man.
They're just, but they're like some of the biggest fucking games that are going down right now. Like.
And the new ones, I have to say that even though I don't play them, the shit that they're doing on them now is really interesting. The direction they're going on is pretty fun.
That's what I'm just like talking with you and even like with Mando and whatever else. You're like, is this it for video games? Because I'm like, video games are getting to a point where like the gameplay and the like the game mechanics are getting so evolved that when the performances really get there, you're going to be in this whole like new area, and they're doing a lot more. Like, if you listen to voice acting and acting just even like 10 years ago in video games compared to what it is now,
they could do better but they don't have the time, and that's sort of the issue. You go in there for one day, they've got 5 days to film tons of cut sequences and stuff, and you're just, you know, although the new Assassins, I have to say, I think they brought in some talent from overseas and stuff. I hope that's not giving anything away, but they're really good. They take it really seriously.
It's not the Krusty the Clown school of voice acting.
No, it's definitely not.
L.A. Noir. I don't know if you heard of L.A. Noir.
Yeah, L.A. Noir, I think, changed the...
Yeah, exactly.
The
and like at the same time, though, because of the process that they were doing in L.A. Noir, they did and they didn't, because you ended up with, like... They didn't want to waste dialogue because they had so many real actors.
Yeah.
So they almost narrowed themselves gameplay-wise what they could do, because they're like, we're paying Hollywood actors to do all these scenes. They don't want to like waste dialogue of like what happens if you kill the guy, what happens if you don't kill the guy.
Yeah.
They want to like put all of it on display.
It was a bit more like a digital book or something.
Yeah, exactly. It was like
that's exactly what it was like.
It was like you could like I mean, spoilers for L.A. Noir. The game came out 2 years ago, so if you haven't played it, fuck off. Whether or not you're the shittiest cop in the world or the best cop in the world,
the
storyline progresses exactly the same. They're like, what a hero. And I was like, no, I'm not. I killed everybody. I made false accusations. I put the wrong people in jail. I shot first constantly.
Always shoot first. Always.
Like, as soon as he ran, I shot regardless of whether or not I thought he was guilty.
Or if there's like a crowded
street.
But
they're just sort of like, at the end, the main character like dies, and he still has the same memorial that you would. and you're like, yeah. Just you feel shitty from a gameplay perspective, but you got to see good performances, and now you're like, how do you start to bring all this together? And I think
they're figuring it out.
Exactly. I don't think they're there, because it kind of seems like what you're like, if you're making those good decisions performance wise, you end up pigeonholing yourself into the storyline because you want to put those performances on display and not waste them to being like, you only get to see this really line of powerful dialogue if you rescue the girl and then you climb. And you know, and it's like, it's hard to justify spending all that money paying actors for this scene.
And they
that
were
you might
figuring
not see.
It out because they were making video games. They weren't making TV and they weren't making theater. Like, they didn't really know what they were getting into, I think, when they started working with actors, especially outside of LA.
Yeah.
In studios in other cities and other countries, they weren't exactly sure what they were getting into. And now, certainly Ubisoft, I think a lot of local actors might find this bullshit, but I don't. I mean, it's a business. You got to do it the best way possible. I think 3 years ago, if they were making a game that had British characters in it, yeah, they would have hired locals to do British accents. And now they realize, oh, fuck it. Like, let's go to London and hire Brits and bring them over. And yeah, that's just the best way to do it. It makes the product, it's going to make the product better.
Yeah. And I think that
They learn through experience. But, yeah, I think every decision I've seen them make based on something that happened in the past has been good over there. I like them. I think it's a really smart company.
I hope so.
I can't believe I'm toting the Ubisoft line here, but that's amazing. Yeah.
No, I mean, as a gamer slash like enjoyer of arts, I was like, I would love to have them come together perfectly one day. You know, yeah, where it's like, where you're like, these fucking, the voice acting and stuff is fucking riveting and good. And we were talking about how when you're watching a video game, you can often be like, it was a really good performance. Like, caveat for a video game.
For a video game, that's, you know, what I think too.
Yeah. Where it's just sort of like, you
and hopefully that eventually becomes, no, it's a really good fucking,
it's a really good performance one way or the other. Yeah. So.
You're on TV constantly. I'm constantly seeing you on TV.
The Colgate commercials, I know.
Did you actually do a Colgate commercial?
No, I didn't. I did.
No, but there's the cheese commercial that's
cheese
on now.
The cheese commercial, yeah.
Which I enjoy greatly.
That's
but
good.
But you're not the devil guy. You're the dude going to see him,
no,
right?
No, the yeah, devil guy, he's like a super famous Canadian commercial actor. He's in everything, and he's really, really funny.
I forgot for a second if you were the devil guy or the guy getting the sample of cheese.
I'm the guy getting the sample cheese.
Right.
I don't know this commercial.
It's for the
it's for like
habanero, like
cheese,
pre-shredded cheese, you know,
cheese,
like they get it by the bags.
I was like, Walter and I come from two different worlds where I have a PVR and fast forward the commercials.
I watch all the commercials.
And he doesn't.
I adore the commercials.
So I'm like, what the fuck commercial are you talking about?
And you're also like the new Videotron guy.
Oh, I don't think so.
No?
Kyle's the Videotron guy.
What am I thinking of here?
Kyle
yeah,
was the
no,
old Videotron
wait, are you
guy.
Unless
Beck
guy,
no,
are you some kind of serviceman?
They might have brought a commercial back. I did a Videotron commercial a little while ago.
Oh yeah, it's totally that. But you're in the jumpsuits, right?
No,
you're
that's
like,
not me. No, that would be somebody else then.
This is our
Sorry,
second
dude.
Videotron guy though.
What was the Videotron commercial you did?
I did a Videotron commercial where I make my wife a sandwich and she's trying to understand how the new PBR works, and I'm in the kitchen walking her through it. And at the end, she's like, You seem to know this shit really well. And then I sit down with her and I'm wearing the Videotron uniform.
Yes, this is what I'm talking about. Yeah,
just,
this is totally
just
the one.
Started working.
Yeah, this is an old commercial?
Yeah, I think that's like a year old, but they might have brought it back.
Yeah. Now you're pretty tight with Mike Patterson, right? Or do you know Mike? Or?
No, this is a funny thing.
I'm just making this up.
I've known of Mike since I first moved here. I saw him do a set at like the open mic night on a Monday night at Comedy Works, like, let's say in 1999. And
yeah.
I thought he was amazing. And so me and my friends were just big fans of him ever since. And we've been in many of the same sort of performance circles for a while. Certainly not the comedy thing, but we've shared stages from time to time at like La Sala Rosa or other benefit events.
You guys both get primo commercial work.
But
I was
honestly,
gonna say, both you and
I know
Mike,
he's amazing.
Like, yeah.
But honestly, I've never really met him and we never hung out.
Oh.
But I think that might be changing. There's a rumor going around that we may be doing a play together in the next year or so.
Yeah.
Friend of the show, Mike Patterson.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. He's
well, he's been on the show twice.
Yeah.
So.
He's a hell of a funny dude. He's an amazing singer.
Yeah.
He loves wrestling.
Yeah,
yes,
adores
it.
Yeah, no, it's just because like, I was. For some reason, I thought you guys were chums, but I think it was the commercial work that you guys are starting to get like
maybe it's
similar
same,
kind of
the
like
same vibe.
Yeah,
he's friends with friends of mine though, for sure. Like,
what's the worst commercial you've ever done?
I did a commercial once that never aired, thank God. Where it was back for Bell when when they were trying to get people to start shopping online. So it was about 8 or 9 years ago when I was first starting out. And so the idea was that I was in my underwear in a Bell Mobility store eating Cheesies, just as though right. I was on my couch, talking and just like trying to order shit with a mouthful of crap. So it was bad one because I wasn't quite comfortable doing the whole Will Ferrell sort of my body's really funny. This is a good place to start with humor. But the other thing that had happened, I'd done some weird event a few days before with George Bowser of Bowser and Blue.
Okay.
He'd hired me for a little event, and we were doing like some sort of corporate event, and at one point I got dragged out of like a hotel ballroom on my stomach and my shirt pulled up, and I got rug burn from my navel up to like my chest. And I had to go into this commercial being to the makeup girl being like, I've got, you know, like third-degree burns all on my fucking torso. Can you cover this up? So I was pretty self-conscious through the whole shoot.
I got this doing a ninja roll.
Not for any sort of a performance.
Just drunk on your own time and your own...
It was on a stage.
It was on a stage. It was after a show, and I decided to start doing ninja rolls.
No one was watching.
Keith was watching.
I was watching. I actually just started chanting ninja rolls.
I think it was the highlight of Keith's night.
until he did a ninja roll. I started doing them again.
Fun fact, I'm not very good at doing ninja rolls.
Apparently. Yeah. I don't know how to get a
I'm super enthusiastic about it, but no.
Yeah. It was his girlfriend and I who just started chanting, like, ninja roll, and then he just started rolling around on stage. I think the best is that, like...
hip on both sides.
It was at the venue, so you had like the stage in the front.
What venue is this?
The Turbo House.
It's this converted loft space.
I don't know it. I was thinking some guy's basement. Isn't there a guy who's doing shows in his basement?
That's Darren Henwood. But this was upstairs in a similarly,
but still starring Darren Henwood.
Yeah, with that Darren Henwood was in that too. Yeah,
it's a small venue.
Yeah,
but it's fun. It was a fun show.
Like, so it was like stage, like maybe about 10 rows of chairs, and then there was like the bar at the back, and that's where everybody else was.
Yeah,
because
the show was done.
The show was over, so we were just mingling. And then at the front of the stage, it was like his girlfriend, myself, just cheering ninja roll, then Walter doing ninja rolls on stage.
How many did you end up doing?
Like 10,
a bunch. Way more. 10, and, okay, 10, 12. Way too many considering
early on. Yeah,
I hurt myself on every single roll. I would do it. I would do a roll. I would break one. And I'd be like, holy shit, that hurt. And then the girlfriend's like, stop doing this. Stop doing ninja rolls. I'm like, I'm going to do five more.
Your girlfriend might have said stop. I
bruises
was just
everywhere.
Keep going. More ninja rolls.
So what are we doing? Are we hitting
five
questions?
Five questions.
Yeah, we do like a five question segment.
Yeah, we've been just rolling.
It's
here,
been
right?
fun, yeah.
Yeah,
it's been a good time. And you thought you had nothing to talk about.
I did. I rambled a little bit. I do tend to ramble from time to time.
That's
but
great
I
for the podcast
together.
Though.
Not for listeners, but
no, it's especially for listeners.
Okay, good. So this is a rapid fire segment, you guys.
No, it's not even rapid fire. It's
I like
slow.
To make it rapid fire,
Walter
except when
to
I
rush
don't.
People through.
Except when I have like an aside that I want to make.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah,
this is good though. Now that we've like it's the same three questions to every guest. Then it's a question from our previous guest, and then the fifth question is, what question would you like to ask our future guest?
God, okay.
Yeah. So that's why we tell you in advance. You can start thinking about it while you answer the other ones.
Okay.
And when we first started doing it, Walter had a lot of input about the first three questions, but I think he's gotten that out of his system.
Okay.
Because he'd be like, I want to talk about this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've been asked them so many times that I think I've just exhausted my own
personal
anecdotes.
Yeah, exactly. You've exhausted your personal anecdotes about the questions. What was your... No, question the first.
Oh,
what
man.
Was your favorite childhood toy or plaything or like...
Besides the rubber sheets.
Besides the rubber sheets. And I still carry with me.
Yeah, exactly.
To this day. I had, when I was really young, my mother, it was one of those classic Christmases where you've opened all the fucking presents and you're a little bit bummed out. But, you know, it was a nice Christmas, and then all of a sudden your mom's like, oh, what's this behind the couch?
The best. What? It's the best.
And it was a gigantic box.
It's the Christmas story.
It's
she pulled a Christmas story.
Box. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the BB gun.
Yeah.
This huge box. Type of present too. I didn't even know I wanted it until I saw it. I don't even think I knew it existed before I opened it up. And it was like, it was the Star Wars. It was an AT-AT from those old original Wars.
How big was this?
It was big. I would say it was about a foot and a half by a foot.
That's pretty cool.
Like, and you could stick your hand into the cockpit and maneuver it like a puppet.
Oh, neat.
And move it, even though it was solid plastic, and it had it took batteries, so it had lights that lit up as it shot. And
that's
it had a
super cool.
Pull trigger. It was amazing. Yeah.
And I feel like, and from a blue collar family too. Oh,
it was
over the moon.
It was
like,
awesome.
Did you keep it?
I had it for years and years and years. It broke and shit, but it didn't bother me. I just
still, even if it doesn't light up,
I lost
anymore,
the. Yeah, there was like there was a to get your hand inside of it. You had to sort of like lower, you know, on the back of the AT-AT. That's where sort of like the troops are all transported in.
Yeah.
That had a little draw door that would drop down, but I lost the door after a while. But
no.
No, it was a wicked present. I loved it.
You lost the collectability value.
Oh no, but I've never been good with collecting things. Like I have record collections, and I still have comics and I have cards and crap that I carry around with me, and they're all dog-eared and fucked up. So,
question numero dos.
Yeah.
Favorite drink.
That's super easy. A bitter old fashioned. Nice. So normally when people make old fashions, they make them with, let's say two dabs of bitters.
Yeah.
Angostura or something like that. But you can get better bitters. Like, my buddy and I are really into them, so we order Fees Brothers and Peugeot bitters offline. Online, I should say.
Off the online. Yeah.
And there's some, like, good, like, blood orange bitters and some
I have blood orange
nice
bitters, I don't know.
Flavors. And actually, you can get them in the Atwater Market. We sort of found out after the fact. They make a really good old-fashioned. Less sweet. I don't like simple syrup. If I'm going to sweeten a drink, I tend to prefer using granulated sugar. And I like to muddle... I like to muddle the fruit. It's a drink that has fruit in it, although I wouldn't consider it a fruity drink at all. It's actually what's best when you really taste the booze. But I like to muddle the rind and the orange in the bottom, and I also like to muddle a maraschino cherry in the bottom before placing a cherry inside afterwards.
Yeah.
Can we, after this is done, can we go somewhere where you can make these for me now?
My girlfriend and I drink old fashions all the time.
But Graham, just that sounds like the best old fashioned.
Really,
Graham,
we typically like
Graham just
won. Because of the like enjoying the booze.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't use the simple syrup.
What's the
just
base
like,
of
well,
the
like the cherry
gin?
Is pretty much the only sweet thing that we put in.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, to sweeten it. And now, actually, my buddy made me a batch of maraschino cherries a few years ago. And now, if I don't have sugar cubes, I will use a little scoop of the syrup from the maraschino cherry. But it is from the maraschino cherry mix rather than just hot water and granulated sugar. But I would put, to sort of just answer it, so normally when people make them at bars, they'll put two, I'm making this gesture as I'm putting the Angostura bitters in. They would put two dabs of Angostura. I would put between four and six, and
wow.
I would never top it up with club soda. People do that sometimes at bars. I would never do that. So it's bourbon. It's a bourbon base, bourbon bitters, ice.
You can make it,
I want the shit out of
this. You often make it with rye.
Yeah, people, certainly Canadians make it with rye.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Bourbon
if
sounds
you get
better.
It at the Dominion Tavern, they'll make it with rye unless you specify.
You can ask them.
I prefer with bourbon.
Yeah,
no, but you're not. But you always like shit on the fact that I like rye. So
what's that?
You always shit
I drink
on
it though too.
Yeah, no, but that's, you're
but
not.
You really. like it. It's weird. Like I like it because it's the cheapest thing in the store.
No,
anyway.
I like rye because I'm Canadian.
I don't like it either. I hate it.
It
makes
me
sick.
I'll drink
but, like,
it.
I have no like Scotch heritage or whiskey heritage or whatever else like that. Like the gin that I like, the drink that I drink is gin. Like
right.
I drink a lot of gin, so I'm like I like rye.
That's
and
very
I'm,
British gin.
Yeah, I'm half British.
There you go.
But yeah, like. But that's it. But so when I'm making a cocktail, I'm like, yeah, rye, because I don't have the like, I guess the refined palate to identify like good bourbon or good scotch.
That's not the answer. You just like rye. I mean, that's fair.
I think it does taste a little cheaper than a good bourbon.
There's good rye, apparently. I just haven't put the time.
There's like a black label. There's like a black label Canadian club. I saw that in the store the other day.
There's
like a 12-year-old like Canadian. I was like, that's just silly.
Third question.
Yeah, here we go.
Best time you ever had.
Best time you've ever.
So the third question is like a fucking bomb.
Oh, my God.
Just drop it.
So fist fucking the AT-AT, right?
best time I ever had. Oh, I don't have a really good answer for it. When I was...
a really good time.
You look kind of scary when the hat comes off, by the way.
I know. I've got a gigantic
beard. And it's
kind of
big. I think that we can... Wally thinks of the answer on this one. We can mention that Graham could probably be a wrestler.
I wanted to for so...
He's
there was
tall,
a time in my second
head.
Year of university where I had a really long night where I debated dropping out of school and going to... When Shawn Michaels had retired and opened up the TWA Academy in San Antonio, I was like, I'm
not... Oh, when he lost his smile?
Yeah, when he lost his fucking smile, yeah. But I didn't go in the end. I didn't go. And I'm sure the world's better for it. I was lucky enough, I guess, when we started... when I started doing theater, I hooked up with some good folks, and in that, in about 2005, I toured a play. The play was kind of bad at times, but I was able to work in for one show for a year and a half. we performed it and worked on it for weeks at a time in Brooklyn once, Manhattan once, Philadelphia, Montreal, Dublin, and a little community called Media outside of Pennsylvania. Those were some pretty amazing debaucherous times.
Sounds like it'd be a lot of fun.
The show, we performed for a lot of good, smart people. The show never really got good, but we had...
But the times around the show were great.
I'm quickly finding out here that you have some very, very high standards out here.
My best friends aren't... My best friends don't even like me very much because of my standards, so yeah, I don't have a lot of company.
Went to wrestling on your own? ROH, all on your own.
Went to wrestling on my own,
Question four, do you remember
this? Question four.
This is the best. I didn't even need to look it up because we recorded our last one only 3 days
and
ago.
And who was the guest? Who's the
guest?
It was
Kyle Allat. I don't
know who that is.
He was another Videotron spokesman. That's why I thought it was hilarious.
Oh, okay.
He did the, if you remember, the skinny guy who did tons of copies.
No, I do remember him. Yeah. He went to Concordia, I think, for like a year when I was there.
Yeah.
Years and years ago, he did the Videotron stuff, right?
Yeah. But he did the Videotron stuff like 10 years ago where it was like...
I remember that guy.
Yeah.
Was he a comedian too?
No, he's the theater guy. Okay. Yeah, he's an actor guy. Yeah.
Yeah, but he also was putting a sketchcom troupe. That's what he was plugging.
Okay.
So,
okay.
I mean, he's not a comedian stand-up wise, but.
By the way, something you might want to, like, we're a few minutes away from ending this, but you might want to have something in the back of your mind to actually plug.
To plug?
Yeah, but just so yeah. So
go
what was
buy
Kyle's
all
question?
The Assassin's Creed games.
Yeah. What was Kyle's question?
Huh? Kyle's question is, what is the most important book you've never read?
That was a good question.
That's a pretty good fucking question, actually. What's the most important book I've never read?
Yeah.
I have no idea. What was his answer? Does he answer?
I don't remember his answer. I remember mine.
What was yours?
I answered The Godfather.
Oh, wow.
That's not really an important book, though.
That's
but
a
it
work
is,
of
though.
Fiction, though. That's a work of fiction.
Yeah, but it,
but
yeah,
it's okay. It could be, you know.
Yeah, it could be a work of fiction, and it's not
it's
even
like
that important
some book,
a book
that you feel that you regret
I
not having read. Yeah, that's
yeah,
like
exactly.
I should have read this by now. I feel stupider for not having read.
Yeah,
this.
You know what? I think actually, okay, the book that I sort of always feel every summer that I should read that I haven't read is The Brothers Karamazov. I haven't read the Dostoevsky. Everybody
wow.
I know who works in the theater always tells, they're just like,
you and Dostoevsky,
the old folks,
you
the old folks are always just like, it's the greatest book ever written, that and the fucking James Joyce.
Yeah, but they're probably wrong, though, so it's fine.
Ulysses,
oof.
Yeah, but yeah. I flipped through Ulysses years ago in high school.
Gave it a quick read.
So, yeah, I was just like, this is impossible.
Yeah,
I did. Smart.
I've read the complete.
So Ulysses, actually, I might say Ulysses and Brothers.
Yeah,
I was like, the worst part is it's not even that rewarding. Like, I haven't read Ulysses, but I read the complete work of Chaucer in the Old English.
Okay.
And it was like, I don't feel better about myself. I think like I was like, and like it's Chaucer's Old English is actually he draws from a lot of French. So even though like the gibberish of it, like or what you would consider to be like, I can't fucking make sense of this. You can if you know French.
Okay.
Because there's different types of Old English. Some of it pulls from Germanic. Some of it.
I seem to remember, yeah, I read Canterbury Tales at one point at university, but I don't remember anything.
Yeah,
about
exactly.
It.
But you're just
I read
sort of,
it on the toilet.
You're, yeah, no, but you're like, now I did this.
Yeah,
thanks.
Now I did it. Exactly.
You know, and you're like, I guess that's cool.
Moving on.
So now is your chance.
My question.
Your question to our future guests, without knowing who the guest is. Or guest or guests.
This is going to be really pretentious.
Great.
And I apologize, but it's the only thing I can think of. When I was a teenager and I was... considered myself sort of punky and outre. There was a movie that was made by a British director, Lindsay Anderson, an early Malcolm McDowell movie, if not the first Malcolm McDowell movie.
If?
It's called If, exactly. Yeah. So
you're just bringing it.
Cheers,
boom.
Walter. Because it's like, it's one of my favorite movies and I still watch
haven't
it.
Haven't seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen
nope.
it? Okay. All right.
Greatest movie you've never seen.
That's, there you go. And when they're being particularly rebellious at one point, I don't actually think it's Malcolm McDowell. I think it's his friend. But he writes on the wall of one of the dormitories, when do we get to live? That's what I'd like to know.
When do we get to live?
Wow.
Yeah, that's your question to the...
Holy shit.
You're like, Graham Cuthbertson,
you know, next
clotheslines you with the fifth
next
question.
Episode, I think
and your
we're
next
start
guess
the episode with the five-question segment, just so they can think about the answer.
And your next guest is going to be like, what pretentious cunt of fucking
yeah, I have an idea of who the next guest might be.
What fucking dickhead.
It'll be fun.
Oh shit! So this was fun. So when can we see you? When can we see you coming? It's something that you want that you're proud to talk about.
Well, I think Trad's a terrific show. It's sold out actually, which is a great thing.
So there you go.
I can't even get my dad tickets right now.
So
really
the name of your production company?
Sidemart.
Sidemart. So, but if you're
Sidemart
watching,
Theatrical Grocery.
Sidemart.ca is our website, and Sidemart, and it's a pretty decent website, although I think it's missing a lot of new content.
Okay.
I'm in Sherlock Holmes with Jay Baruchel.
Oh, cool.
Next, in a month and a half, I think that opens.
Do you think you get Jay on here? Jay, you know, these guys got a really pro podcast
I'm
going.
Not going to make that promise,
the
but I'll
bar
ask
will
him.
Probably be
I'll
open.
I'll certainly ask him. Ask him. There's a
he's
lot
still
of work that
RoboCop, I think. He's still doing shit. Like,
yeah. Sherlock Holmes opens when?
Sherlock Holmes, I believe, opens...
I should know this, too.
I can't give a date, but it opens... March, April. It'll open, I think, that's the late first, early second week of May, and runs, I think, right now until the first weekend of June. I think it's going that far right now.
Who are you playing?
I play the what's ostensibly the Watson to Moriarty.
So okay.
Moriarty's
oh, cool. That's kind of a, that sounds like a juicy role.
I don't have... See, it's not like before. I don't have many lines, and they play on me being big. I hope to wear, like... Like 3-inch lifts.
Nice.
Like really.
I was hoping you were going to say a very tiny bowler.
No, I do.
I'm hoping to wear a very small bowler to make myself look even bigger.
I want him to look like a bit like one of those like colonial hunters that would visit Africa during the turn of the century.
What do you call those? The flat caps.
Yeah, those little like those white little white hard rim cap. That's right, exactly.
Who's Moriarty?
Moriarty is Kyle Gatehouse, actually.
Oh, no shit.
They go young and squirrely, and I think it's going to be a...
Wow, you're Moriarty's assistant, and Gatehouse is Moriarty. That's weird.
But I think he matches Jay very well physically, and I think that sort of was what they were going for. They wanted to have these two nemesis be people that could very well have
same
be
size
the same
and shape,
place,
and
same time.
So if you don't think you can convince different Jay to come on, you could definitely try to get Gatehouse on.
Oh, Gatehouse,
I think Gatehouse we could.
Gatehouse would be great. Yeah. You'd have a lot to talk to
him
about.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I've spoken to him before. He's a good guy.
Let's aim for them both and settle on.
We're inviting both you and your great friend Jay Baruchel on. Please come on the show.
Yeah, Gate has been a great guest.
This has been Go Plug Future Guests.
Yeah. We might be taking a break. Well, not we won't be taking a break, but we might.
We're not. There's no break, actually.
No. But there won't be a break in enough time. This is for the listeners.
I like this part of the podcast. Are we still really on? Because it's really been spiraling out.
Doesn't matter. This is how it ends.
Spinning
this is
our
the epilogue,
wheels for
yeah.
the last 5 minutes.
No. But yeah, I don't know. This is
just so we're just openly talking about who we might have on.
Fuck
it, though.
I devalue
this is for the listeners. This is like the listener time where they're like, we hung out till the end, and now we're getting real shit.
The real shit.
But yeah, no, if you are a listener, a long-time listener waiting for the thing, Walter might not be on our next episode.
If I can, I'll do it.
If you can, you'll do it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to schedule it. And if
tell
you can make
them
it.
What the what, why can't you make it, Walter?
I'm going to be in this short film.
I'm going to try my hand at the actor stuff.
Yeah.
There's the other thing we didn't get to talk about, the process of acting, but I think anyone can do it. I think it gets overthought. Really, yeah, you're going to be great.
You did sort of mention that. You sort of hinted at that, yeah.
Yeah, but you said, but if you're a method actor, you suck, Walter. There's
a place for it. There's a real place for it.
There's a place for it, and it's not the back lot of you.
I just had to learn.
All right, I figure Leland's grooves are probably playing about now.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us today, guys.
My pleasure.
Despite sickness.
Really
and
yep,
coming out after St. Patty's Day, and this is Go Plug Yourself. I'm Keith.
I'm Graham?
No.
No, I'm Walter. I'm Walter.
And thanks a lot for coming on.
I'm Walter.
We fucked this up again, guys. All right, we have to take it to the top.
Those sweet, sweet piano tunes you're listening to right now come courtesy of Leland Beckman and Oral Turpitude. Oh, man, that was some great podcasting, wasn't it? Anyhow, be sure, as always, to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, add us on iTunes, buy our stuff, and basically try as hard as you can to make us happy in every single way possible. Of course, be sure to check back every day on 9to5.cc for comics on Wednesdays, podcasts on Thursdays, Scott or Sophie's art on Fridays, and seriously, we'll try as hard as we can to get Zombies and Loathing, Fuck Mondays, and Templars back as soon as we can. Thanks for listening, everyone.
9to5.cc. We're not working. Why should you?